Hey, welcome to Life 2.0 Podcast, Throwback Thursday edition. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to go up the down staircase in the outdoor. Try to make sense out of the senseless, and if at all possible, find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Hey, glad to have you joining me from anywhere and everywhere around planet Earth. It's been an interesting week. I got to just rewind just a little bit to a couple of the podcasts that I did a few weeks ago. I'm still getting email, text messages, carrier pigeon. Doesn't really matter how it shows up anymore. But that John Denver thing I did on the December 31st, last year technically, still has incoming messages. I'm fascinated in some ways that a guy like that apparently will never, ever go out of style. People just love what he has to say, and it's so relevant. And I had a friend of mine, Richard Kaufman, who is the guest conductor of the Chicago Symphony here in Chicago, the CSO, and he does this thing 3-4 times a year called Music and Movies. And they take these incredible classic movies like Casablanca and some Star Wars stuff and Jaws, and the CSO plays live music to it. And it's fascinating and wonderful and incredible. And it gets a guy like me to go to the symphony, which I normally wouldn't do. But I sent him a copy, or a link, I should say, to the podcast. And Richard actually conducted for John quite a few times. Lee Holdridge was John's original conductor. And when Lee couldn't do it, Richard would step in. And I actually met Richard many years ago in Washington, D.C. at a concert. And then we reconnected probably 10 or 11 years ago when he was here in Chicago. Anyway, the backstory really doesn't matter, but what does matter is Richard's comments. And he said, you know, I listened to that over and over again. And he recalled some of the songs that were in that show, and one in particular was called The Flower That Shattered the Stone, which Connie Reeder was singing backup on. And that clip is from The Tonight Show with Jay Leno from 1990, I think it was, or 91. Anyway, Richard said, you know, it's astonishing to me, but not surprising, that John's music is still as relevant as ever. And that even though he has been gone going on 25 years, it seems like so much of what he wrote those many, many years ago was ahead of its time, but perhaps right on time, which makes it kind of timeless. And that music, that energy pushes back on the darkness, even though he's no longer here. And I never really quite thought of it that way, but I think Richard was onto something. And then I went into this concept that I think that's what I attempt to do on these shows. I'm not going to sing, so don't worry about that. But the conversations that I have with people is an attempt on some level to wake that up, if you get my drift. There's an F word in there in the middle, and get about our lives and do something that's important with it. You know, we're not here very long, and there's no guarantee you're going to be here tomorrow. So what are we dicking around with today? I'm not really sure. Since this is Throwback Thursday, I went back to 2016 on this one after coming across a headline yesterday. A headline on an online site called Deadline. Well, there you go. And this is the headline on Deadline. The NFL partners with U.S. Green Beret Nate Boyer to promote his directorial debut called MVP. Exclusive, the NFL has teamed up with the United States Army Green Beret Nate Boyer to promote Boyer's feature directorial debut MVP in addition to the nonprofit on which the film is based. The film dramatizes the formation of merger of vets and players MVP, the nonprofit created by Boyer and Fox Sport NFL insider Jay Glazer. Boyer's in the film, Tom Arnold, Christina Ochoa, Tony Gonzalez, Randy Couture, Howie Long, Michael Strahan. All these people are coming in this thing, and it's really a reflection on the work that Nate has done as his tenure and his leadership with MVP has been around for quite a while now. And I keep watching this guy pop up in the headlines. If you ever catch him on ESPN, he's always making some commentary about, you know, overcoming adversity and working with players off the field and trying to up that ante a little bit for them and the way they perform as human beings, not just as athletes. So everything he does catches my attention because his story, his path is friggin' unbelievable. You're going to hear the entirety of this conversation. I'm keeping my open and close in this very short because I want you to be able to hear this conversation I had with Nate, as I mentioned, in 2016 on CBS. And that's one of the great things about audio vaults. I go back and pull this stuff up and I'm like, I've only listened to this two or three times. It is still golden to me. It's kind of like, I suppose, a little bit of a stretch going back and listening to John Denver's music from years ago and going, it still has relevance. This is just 5-6 years ago. And watching this guy climb the ladder and do the things he's done does not surprise me whatsoever. So without further ado and without further delay, I'm going to drop the needle on this. This is Nate Boyer and I, our conversation from 2016 on Life Matters. And last year, I reconnected with the Kehoe brothers, a couple of guys that are like Heckle and Jekyll to me. They're just fantastic, you know, salt of the earth Chicago guys that are now doing some great things in the world with, technology and stuff like that. We had a great conversation. In the course of that conversation, reminiscing about the haunted house and other things, they were telling me about a guy who I had heard a little bit about, and it turned out that they were working with him. They had done some work on his website and some other things like that. His name's Nate Boyer. And I'm like, where do I know this? And I remember seeing something on ESPN about Nate Boyer's story, how a guy went from, and kind of not knowing what he wanted to do with his life to some amazing things in the world, and his work in Darfur and going into the Green Berets and Special Forces, a slacker, right? And then going on to become a long snapper in the NFL, even though he never played a down for football before that. So those are the kind of guys I want to talk about. When I went to his website and looked at the video, deeply moved. Words are one thing in life, and action is a whole other thing. And Nate Boyer joins me on Life Matters. Nate, it's great to have you. Honored to have you in the microphone, sir. Oh, I did it. I said, sir.
It's okay, sir.
Yeah, I was telling before we came on the air, as veterans from decades apart, it becomes part of the vernacular sometimes. And I realized that I responded that way in the email, as did you, but that there's nothing wrong with that either. I'm really glad to have you on. And the route to getting here is really interesting to me. But the thing that jumped out first and foremost to me when I was watching your video was the words when the ESPN guys, which did a great job, it's at nateboyer.com. You have to watch this. It's fantastic. It's very inspirational, if not motivational. But there was a time, and the term they used, Nate, was that you were a rudderless person, that you really didn't know where you're going. Pretty accurate and very strong words to describe a time in your life where you didn't know where you're going.
Yeah, I mean, I think, in my early 20s, as with, I'm sure, a lot of people, especially ones like me that didn't go to college, didn't really know which direction it would be heading. It was just more than anything, I think, a lack of purpose. It's not that I was just aimless so much as I didn't know how I could help and how I could make a difference in the world and how what I would be doing that would actually make me feel like I mattered. Really, it was just sort of I was doing things. I wasn't, just kind of sitting on my ass doing nothing. But if it wasn't something that I was really passionate about and it wasn't motivating me and it wasn't for something bigger or someone else. Mm. So that's where that, I think, rudderless sort of feeling, came from. And it was, it's frustrating and it becomes really depressing, actually.
But listen, let's just rewind here a bit, because just to have the thought that you're supposed to do something with your life, unfortunately, I think, is such a pervasive mindset that, some people feel like they're born, they're just here to take up space, complain, and die. And I don't know, I've never felt that way. Is that something you came to the game with here? Or did you learn that growing up? Where did you get this mindset that you're supposed to actually do something with the time you're given? Is that something you learned?
Well, I think a lot of that is maybe some of it is the family I grew up in. I have two amazing parents that are very motivated and have worked very hard their entire lives to, give their kids an opportunity, whatever they want to do. And, also though, it wasn't so much that I think that we're destined to do something or there's that perfect job or perfect, thing, whatever it is that we're supposed to do with our lives. But I just felt that I think being born in this country and into a good family and a good situation and having all these opportunities, it's like, if I'm not doing something big, if I'm not, but when I say big, I don't mean it doesn't have to be the NFL or whatever, some of the stuff I ended up doing, but just something that, that not everyone is capable of doing, something that's a challenge, but also is, is really for the greater good at the end of the day. Hmm. If I'm not doing something like that with these opportunities and with the hand I was dealt, then it's almost offensive to the world in some way. You know what I mean? Because I'm given this, it's almost like the, you know, in all these superhero comics and movies and stuff like that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. Like, mm-hmm. if you're given the gift like that, if you're not, I don't want to say taking advantage of it, but if you're not utilizing it, in some ways, you know, you're kind of an asshole.
Well, yeah,
I don't know. That's just how I felt.
Listen, and this is perfect. And here's why. We are in a very tumultuous time, but we always are in tumultuous times. I think one of the big challenges people face is that we don't often look at our history. We have a forgettery more than a memory. And when you look at the difficulties and the challenges of just America itself, pushing and pulling constantly, that's always been there. But what you just drilled down to, I think, is the essence of, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I'm not going to start. You heard me do the roll in. I'm not going to do politics. It's just a waste of my time. But I have a real difficulty with any human being saying this isn't a great country, because you just pointed out, and I said in the beginning, if you were dropped off in this country, in these zip codes, and you weren't dropped off in Darfur, you run the goddamn lottery. And if you don't see it that way, I think a perspective shifts in order. And that perspective, when I was watching your video, was no more apparent and so well, presented by you in the way that it was done in the video, that, you know, in 2004, you decide that you're going to go do something in another part of the world. And I think while you were helping them, you were obviously sculpting something different in yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's a very common cliche. People say, oh, this, you know, this situation when I meant to go help people, they helped me so much more than I helped them, or I got so much more out of this experience than they did. But in a lot of ways, I mean, it's definitely true. And this was a time in my life where I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and I was working with autistic kids. So it wasn't like I was just doing some horribly selfish thing that was, you know, had me in this rut or whatever, but it wasn't, and I really enjoyed that time, but it wasn't something that I felt like it was right for me. And it wasn't something that I felt like this is the best way for what I've been given to help in whatever help means. And I remember I traveled a little bit before that. You know, every time I would save enough money, I would spend it on a trip, and I would go backpack somewhere. I'd go by myself and just kind of get out of my comfort zone. And I really enjoyed that. But I'm going on these trips, and they don't have an underlying purpose. It was just sort of self-serving. And so I came across this Time Magazine article about what was going on in the Darfur, and the article was called "The Tragedy in Sudan." And it was mostly a photojournalism article by a guy named James Nakwe, who's a pretty prolific war photographer. And the images were, you know, not pretty, to be honest. And for whatever reason, I couldn't take my eyes off them. I couldn't stop thinking about what it would be like to grow up in that situation, mm-hmm. what it would be like to be there. And I just felt like, you know, as short a time as it would be, I needed to go there and do something and help in some way, and just be a presence and any way that I could. And so, you know, I did what I could to get over there. I called all these NGOs, and everyone was telling me no because I didn't have a degree and I didn't have any special
skills. I want to help, but you don't have a degree to help.
I mean, I didn't really understand that when I heard that, because it's like, I'm not over there teaching philosophy
right.
or something.
You want to help.
I want to dig ditches and help just any way I can, help these people get along each day in the refugee camps. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, but you need a degree for that, Nate, apparently, right?
I guess. I don't know.
I get
maybe you don't, but that's what they told me. And they told me, they're like, I'm sorry, it doesn't. I'm like, well, I'll fly myself over there. I'm not asking for anything from you except for an opportunity to help you, you know?
Wow.
And I got a bunch of no's. That's just the way it is. And so I already had it made up in my mind though, that I was doing this. So I went, I went to a travel agency and I bought a plane ticket, and I somehow got a visa from the consulate. I don't know why they gave me one. I don't even remember what I wrote, but it got in the right person's hand and they gave me the stamp.
So you pencil whipped it and it was good enough. Yeah,
exactly. I'm sure there was a little bit of BS in there, but that's commonplace. It's just in anything these days.
So I
ended up, I flew over there and I got to the capital of Chad. So across the, just to the western border of Sudan is the country of Chad. And that's where the refugee camps were, right along the Sudanese border, which is where the Darfur region is. And I got to the capital there. I was able to kind of BS my way onto a UN flight. And I flew out there and was able to help for, a good month and a half at the camps. And it was, like I said a few minutes ago, it really changed me in so many ways. It wasn't just the experience in accomplishing that and, building sort of that self-confidence that I could make anything happen, but also it was just being around these people that have absolutely nothing and had whatever they did have was completely taken from them. It's these kids that are just, maimed and really, really beat up. And, all the women had been raped. All the men were off fighting or dead already. And still every day, is a gift to them in a lot of ways. Kind of like what you were talking about earlier. They just saw the light in all that somehow. And it was hard for me to see it at the time, but I remember playing soccer with the kids every day. And these kids are limping around, and they have a big fat smile on their face and they don't care if they're the best kid on the team or the worst player on the team. I mean, it's just an opportunity to be outside and kick a ball around with this weird white guy with a big red beard, And it was just cool to them. It was just life. They were just embracing it and enjoying it. And it was just like, God, what do I complain about on a daily basis? And it's sort of funny. I remember coming back here, trying to figure out the next step. Am I going to, with the military and all that. And I came back here and I'm here for a short time. And it's just the nature of what we live in here. I become that person again where I start to bitch about this stupid stuff.
Right. Right.
And it's just, everything is so easy here and so nice. Just like you were talking about. It's unbelievable how different it is. And yet, we're never, going to be satisfied with the great place that we live. But that really struck me as frustrating in myself and with our country and with its people. And I love what we stand for. I love the way
the idea of it all.
Just the passion that we have, And that's why I love living in Los Angeles. A lot of people are like, why do you live in Los Angeles? It sucks. There's traffic and all this. And I'm like, because there's so much ambition there, And you can feel it. And that's just how our country is mostly. And I love all that. But at the same time, we're very entitled. And we got a long way to go to realize really understand how fortunate we are. I know people say all the time, we take things for granted here, but it's at such an extreme level sometimes.
I've traveled quite a bit in the world. I've done a couple talks in Trinidad, actually, which is one of my favorite places on the planet. And I remember riding with some friends there, and there's an area there where you really shouldn't go. Even if you live there, you shouldn't go. Probably had experience like this. I've gone to dinner with friends, and there's armed guards outside the restaurant because people get kidnapped and killed and things. And I think part of the challenge with living in this country is, and I've said this before in conversation and radio and blogs and articles, I really don't want to have. You can't have any kind of conversation with anybody who hasn't, probably traveled more than 150 miles from where they were born, because they're so myopic in their view of life and the world, that entitlement piece is so lodged in. And yet when you go and you travel and you see that we're all up against it, it's just a little bit different. And depending on what zip code you have, or even if you have a zip code, it tends to shift people. And I think until that shift comes, until something comes into your life that makes it more difficult than it is, we take it for granted. And one of the things I was so drawn to your story is not just your work in Darfur, but then, that'd been enough for some people. Yeah, I went for a little while and I helped out and I dug some ditches and I had to bullshit my way on, which I find fascinating anyway. They weren't going to let you in to help because you'd have a degree. Then you got to bullshit your way onto a flight. Something's wrong there. But that would have been enough for a lot of people. But for you, you decided to continue on and build on that. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Nate Boyer is in the guest chair today on Life Matters, once again proving that it's not what happens to you in life, it's how you respond to it that counts. Back with more right after this. One of the things that just torques my bolts, however, and rubs my rhubarb and boils my goddamn chicken is this concept that somehow, you know, suffering is all in the mind. There are people suffering, I mean really suffering, and then we think we're suffering because we have to sit in traffic. Or we think we're suffering because we don't like the way the tax structure is. Or we think we're suffering because, you know, the Cubs aren't winning. And, you know, there's a lot of ways that it's all comes to us. And I've had too many experiences in my life that I couldn't ignore. I tried to ignore them, but it didn't work. And then they kept coming back time and time again, just in different forms. And I started to realize that maybe, just maybe, I'm not a cosmic burp or a mistake. And maybe that there's something I should do with the time that I've been given. It's been with me for most of my life. I've had some amazing influences that cultivated that in me. So when I come across other people that think maybe they should be doing something with their life instead of sitting around just stuffing a bag of Pringles in their face, I'm on board with that because that's how the world really changes. I'm going to say this right now. If you really believe and really think that what's going on in the White House is more important than what's going on in your house, something's out of whack. There's things that you could be doing in your life right now, today, right now, to really making a positive impact, not just in your life or your family's life or the people around you, as opposed to sitting doing the woulda, coulda, shoulda dance. Nate Boyer does not do the woulda, coulda, shoulda dance. He's done some incredible things in his life. And while I find it fascinating like Nate's, like I was saying before we went to the break, I find it fascinating that some people will be called to action and that's a great thing and they did it. And then 20 years later, they go, well, I did do a good thing. You decided, however, not just to do something with the life you were given here and go to Darfur and help out. Then you felt a responsibility, a calling to serve our country. And you did that in Special Forces through the Green Berets. You know, another slacker move on your part. But what prompts a guy to go from Darfur and then come back and go, I've seen the worst in this. I need to do more. And then you did. What was the, was there a pivot point, some leverage? Was there an aha? What happened?
Well, you know, actually, my last week in Darfur, I headed back to the capital and was getting ready to quote unquote exfil, and
right.
I remember listening on this radio at the place I was staying. I was staying at these people's houses, these local chattians. They had this compound where they lived with their entire family, and I actually got malaria my last week there, so I'm like bedridden. It's coming out of both ends. It was ugly. And it was not a good feeling. And I started to get back in my head a lot during that time because I was just kind of laying around the last mm-hmm. 3 days, especially. And I was like, what am I going to do now? Like, I can't just go back to my normal life that I had before and not continue to be affected by this. And not talking about malaria, talking about what I'd seen.
Right. Your experience. Sure.
And Fallujah was happening right at that time, 2004. And I had a little radio there and I was listening to this, like a play-by-play on the BBC. And it wasn't so much just like all of a sudden, like it wasn't really an aha moment, like that's what I need to do. Because I was not sure if that would suit me. You know what I mean? Necessarily just going to war. I didn't want to just go kill people. That wasn't my goal. And not that that's what I thought we were doing, but I just didn't,
right.
There had to be some sort of a continued purpose, and I had to be more about helping the people there than sort of quote unquote defending our freedom here.
Right.
And so, and I didn't know what job that would be or what that looked like, but I knew, you know, in that way, I would a kind of feel like I sort of earned my Americanism in some way, but also b, you know, really helping those. So I came helping those people in those places. So I came back here to the States and I remember going to get my oil changed or something. And I pick up another magazine article and like the cover's got this guy fast roping out of a helicopter and it says Special Forces on the cover. And so I'm thinking it's going to be, you know, something talking about the idea of this John Rambo Green Beret.
Right, right.
For John Wayne Green Beret. And I start reading it, and it's talking about how what the Green Berets do, what the Special Forces actually do, is much more of this humanitarian mission, and that everything we do in those places is by, with, and through local forces, you know, by, with, and through the indigenous people of whatever country we're in.
Right.
And that was really interesting to me. And I started reading more and kind of studying more and finding out that, you know, when you go over there, you fully embed with the culture, and you, a lot of times you end up living with these guys. And it was much more of this idea of fighting for those that can't fight for themselves,
mm-hmm.
and training and trying to build something sustainable there before you leave, than this idea of just going to, you know, these foreign places and just killing people. And yes, it's for a good cause in some way, but it wasn't, the mission's a little less clear.
Got it.
And in this way, doing this was kind of right up my alley. It just made sense to me, and it spoke to me, and I just started studying it, looking into it, and realized that there was an opportunity to do that, even coming in off the street. It just kind of opened back up a year before. If you passed all the certain requirements, then obviously you had to go through a year and a half of very intense, grueling training.
Right.
If you were able to suck it up and do it and complete it and excel at it, then you would become a Green Beret.
And out of, what was it, 114, 140? I don't remember the number. Only 11 of you guys made it through. You were one of 11. Is that right?
Yeah. So that was the group of guys like me,
yeah,
that were straight off the street,
right,
into basic training, into airborne school, and then straight into the Special Forces qualification course. Now, there's many other guys that come from the regular Army.
Correct.
That were existing soldiers, and a lot more. I think there was a much higher percentage of them because
right.
they had the, you know, they
had the background, right,
experience, mm-hmm. and all that. But from the guys like in my situation, yeah, it was a very high attrition rate.
Mm.
And I kind of remember sitting around in basic training and kind of having a good idea of who the guys were that would make it, just because
right
that how much it really meant to them and how much effort they were putting in everything that they did, and I was pretty close to being right. There was a few guys that surprised me, but for the most part, I had, you know, you could kind of tell early on.
I want to go back to something you said that I've never heard anybody say, and I didn't, maybe I thought, how would you say it? You said that you should do something to earn your Americanism. That is a concept that I've never quite heard before. And like I said, I've never heard it put in such a short, succinct thought, that maybe there's something we should do every day. What a concept, to earn what we have here, or that earn the opportunity. Could you just expand on that a little bit? Because I've never heard that before. You mean that would, you know, Nate, that would mean that we might have to be responsible participatory in what we've been given.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I chose to be born here just as much as, you know, those people in the Darfur chose to be born there. It wasn't something, it just happened, and I did nothing to earn that. You know what I mean? I did nothing to earn all this opportunity and freedom and choice. I mean, I can literally do what I want, be in love with whoever I want, believe what I want, pray to what I want, vote for who I want, whatever. All that is very, very rare in the world. It's not like that almost anywhere. You know?
And the reason we don't realize how rare it is because we never go look to the rest of the world to stick our nose out there like you did. Perception is everything. And perspective is everything.
You have to. You know, I mean, I'm not... I'm probably going to get fried for this because I've been fried for saying this before, but although I totally disagree with, you know, the politics involved in it and whatnot, someone like Che Guevara, when he was a young guy in his early 20s, inspired me. I remember reading about that because he was born in a well-to-do family in Argentina. He was in medical school and all this stuff, and he could have just kept on doing that. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, but instead, he wanted to go see the world, you know, and it changed him. And there's a famous quote, you know, from him that is, it goes, before you can change the world, let the world change you.
Amen.
You know?
That's right.
And it's so true, you know, and that guy just, you know, stuck his nose out there, like you said, and just kind of went for it. And it completely changed his total perceptions of everything, but also the way he ended up living his life. And, and I'm not trying to compare myself to Che Guevara, but
I understood.
I use that example because I think a lot of people don't, when they hear that name, a lot of times they just think of this guy that was, you know, this the godfather of guerrilla warfare, and you know, this the famous image of him and just communism and all those things get planted on him. But I don't think that's necessarily who he completely was. Just like when you talk about Pat Tillman,
yes.
Really understand what he was completely like. You know, he was very similar in that way too.
Yeah,
he just wanted to do something. He wanted to make a difference. He put himself out there, and he wanted to understand, you know, why things were the way they were. And that's exactly how I felt. Why is the world like this? Why do I get this and they don't?
Right.
You know, trying to figure out the injustice in the world, and I still have no clue about
right.
why.
But this
I probably never will. But to earn that feeling, or earn the right to be here, you know.
It's interesting to me, and if you're catching us late, you can go back and listen to the other part of it. But Nate Boyer's joining me, and we're talking about this incredible journey he's been on that I think, in many ways, chose you, and you chose it. I think a lot of times life's knocking on the door, but we're too busy watching Dance with the Stars or some bullshit. So I think this stuff is always coming towards us. It's like the phone's ringing, but we're too busy to answer it because we think we have to do this stuff over here, which is true. You know, we got to pay the bills, and I get all that stuff. But something happens when you say yes. When you say yes, I'm going to Darfur. When you say yes, I'm going to jump over a couple hoops anyway because I didn't have a degree, I'm going anyway. When you say yes to bullshitting your way onto a flight, when you come back and you're getting your oil changed and you look at a magazine and you listen to those nudges that life's trying to give us, all of us. And the difference, I think, is saying yes and no. And that part of it is you find out more about yourself than you ever could possibly imagine by saying yes. And most of us are a little afraid of what's going on inside, so we say no a lot. And as your story unfolds, you know, you are continuing to expand your cycle and circle of influence. And so here's a guy, you know, at one time you wanted to be an actor in Hollywood, and now when you go to NateBoyer.com, you see this guy who has had this almost like a connect the dots, you know, but you can't figure out what the connect dots are until you look back. And as I'm looking from, you know, all the way back when you earned your Green Beret in 06, which is 10 years ago, to where you're at now, and there's a lot, we're going to come back with one more segment, talk about that. But when you look back a decade and you realize so much of this started with being a kid who wanted to make a difference and earn his Americanism, I think it's a lesson we all need to take to heart. Nate Boyer is joining me on Life Matters. More after this.
You're listening to Life Matters with John St. Augustine.
It was my guy, Teddy Roosevelt, who said, do what you can where you are with what you have. And I think Nate Boyer has taken that to the nth degree. And he's joining me on Life Matters. And you know, again, pushing back the walls of the crap that goes on in the world so much we can't do anything about, truly, as much as I've been in the media 20 years. When I was doing regular quote radio, I'm using my quote fingers, you can't see it, but I would sit in the studios of, you know, major metropolitan radio stations, and the news would come on, I'd turn it off. Because I didn't want to be bombarded with stuff I couldn't do anything about. And having conversations about the sphere of influence in your life, which really sometimes only extends from the tip of your nose to the tip of your fingertips, but you can do something with that. And we look at so much suffering in the world and go, how could we allow this? Well, you can alleviate it by doing something and taking some action. That's exactly what Nate Boyer has done. And he joins me. So 10 years ago, you were doing the Green Beret thing, and you did tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and, you know, for that, there's a snap salute and a ticker tape parade, and then you come back, and you decide you're going to go to college and play football, because, you know, that's what I'd do.
Right.
How old were you when you came out, and you're going to walk on at Texas? How old were you?
29.
A young buck.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
It's funny, I remember looking back on that, and when I was probably 14 or 15, and I was playing basketball and baseball and some other sports in high school, but I remember being that age and thinking, man, I would really like to play football. You know, that's my favorite sport to watch. I'm so into it, but I'm just too old. You know, all these other guys at that age, they've already been playing since they were like 8 years old. I'll never catch up in time, you know. So I decided just to wait 15 more years before actually playing.
Makes sense. You'd never played organized football like that. You're going to walk on, and you're going to become a long snapper, deep snapper. You've never done that. So what do? You do what most people would do. You go to YouTube, watch a bunch of videos, and you come back after the coach is like, have you ever done this? No. But you said, I'm in. And you came back, and you did it. And this wasn't, and if it would have been at a junior college, it would have been okay. But this is Texas, man. Hook 'em horns. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Well, I remember I actually was considering going to a small school when I was over in Iraq. And when I kind of made the decision, I wasn't going to re-enlist. I was going to come out and go back to school. Because at that age, I thought, if I'm ever going to go to college, it's got to be now. Which isn't true at the end of the day. But if I ever want to go to college and play football, it is kind of now or never at that point. So I made that call, and I was thinking I want to go to a smaller school, you know, and maybe study film, because film is still something I'm very interested in. I still want to work in that space, and I thought maybe that's what I would do. So I was looking at some smaller schools sort of in the Los Angeles area that had football and a film program. And then a buddy of mine, who's unfortunately passed away now, but we were over there, and he was on the deployment with me, and he told me, he's like, man, he's pretty much the only guy I told about this idea of not just going back to school, but playing football. And he was like, dude, if you go, you got to go big, or it's going to bother you, you know? And,
right.
He was right. It was just kind of who I'd become and who we were. A lot of us over there that worked in units like that, where like, yes, you could go back and accomplish something, but if you're not competing at the highest level with the most elite people and whatever it is that you're doing, there's going to be something inside you that just doesn't feel quite right.
Right.
So I listened to him, and I decided to go to the University of Texas for a lot of reasons. I loved Austin. It's a great school with a great football program and history and tradition, but also that Longhorn logo is everywhere, and especially in the military, it's like America's team. I feel like the military. You see the flags hanging in barracks windows, and you see guys when they're off duty wearing the Longhorn hat. They even in the American Sniper movie, Chris Kyle has that Longhorn hat on.
Right.
I mean, it's true though. It wasn't just a by accident. I mean, that's
it's all part of the Nate Boyer path, is what you're saying. It's all kind of lined up that way. It had to be that way.
Exactly. No, I guess. I mean, couldn't be any other way.
Well, yeah, so it has to be that way, apparently, yeah. But listen, so you do that for a couple of years, and go to nateboyer.com. Great website. Highly inspirational. You know, the open to the show, which you're going to listen to next week when it airs, right, Nate? Of course you are. And you're going to tell everybody?
Of course.
Perfect. The opening says, if you're looking for some inspiration...
I don't have a choice.
That's exactly right. If you're looking for some inspiration instead of desperation, you found it. And what I found at your website was the same thing. There's so much. When I turn my computer on in the morning and Yahoo pops up, every shitty thing that's happened in the last 12 or 24 hours bombards me. It's too much. So when I go to your website, I'm looking at the videos and the things that you're doing. And what I'm finding is a sense of purpose. I'm none of your business. I don't think I could be your dad, but I'm getting close to 60. I got more behind me than in front of me. But the point is, when I looked at this, something jumped in me a little bit going, I'm not going to go out and try for football. I played football. I get it. But what else am I supposed to do with my life? Because it isn't too late. You're never too old. There's always something. And are you finding the response to that? Even though there's the military piece, there's the relief piece, the activist piece, there's the football piece. When you go out and talk to people, which you do quite frequently, your message isn't about those things particularly, but about living your life at the highest level.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I try to hammer this point home to people, like, look, I'm just a human being, and all these things I've done, obviously, we're all gifted in some ways, right? We all have our talents and whatnot. Well, none of these things, I didn't grow up around, military stuff and shooting guns and being that type of person. So when you look at me on paper and think that guy's going to be a Green Beret, you're like, yeah, right. Especially with where I was at in my life at that point.
Right.
And with football, I'm really not a great athlete. I'm a good athlete, but I'm not a great athlete. Definitely not the level of athlete to play at Texas, and especially not a guy that never played football in his life. But all these things, I simply just made a decision that I was going to do that because I was passionate about it. And that was enough to carry me through. And if you just try those things, you know, and look into them. And if it's something that you end up being interested in, you actually like doing, then there's no reason that you can't do it at the highest level, regardless of your age and where you're at. Mm-hmm. I remember finding out later, the guy that took those the photographs in that magazine, that Time magazine article that I initially saw, he lived a completely different life before he went into photography. He didn't even start taking pictures until he was like in his 30s or something. And wow. Then he's like this incredible, you know, war photographer because he made that decision. And I think there's a lot of stories like that people just don't realize. People think they see someone's great at something and they think, oh, that guy was just made to do that.
He's yeah.
You know, and it's not always the case.
It's never the case. You know, it's never the case.
The guy that just, or the girl, I just made a decision that, you know, I'm just going to be the best at this. And, you know, if I'm not, I'll just die trying. And they just go for it, you know, and they don't care what other people think. They don't worry about failing because who cares? We're all going to be 6 feet deep one day anyway.
That's right.
And, why not? You only get one chance at this thing. Why would you waste your time doing stuff that you're just, it's good enough. You know what I mean? It's not depressing, so why not?
But it takes a major mind shift. And I've got some more pieces before I cut you loose here. Nate Boyer joining me. This guy's been all over the map, as it should be. And I think you've left. Remember the movie E.T. where they're kind of catch the alien and they leave those little Reese's pieces laying out so they can catch him? I think
that's
you've
the first
left.
Movie I ever saw in a theater.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I remember reading the book when people still read books about before the movies came out. But I remember seeing that. And so many times in my life, I've thought people that have gone ahead of me have left me the Reese's pieces to tell me where I'm supposed to go. When I looked at your website, Nellie, I mean, you have a whole chronology here of your story, your timeline, but what I'm hearing and what I saw from the stuff that's posted and the things that you've done is that you're giving permission, Nate, to people to do. Maybe they'll never go in the Green Berets, not the point. They'll probably never be a long snapper for the Longhorns, not the point. They may not even go to Darfur and ease suffering, not the point. But what you're doing is giving permission for people to find themselves because we're running out of time. Real quick though, because are you still doing the Unbreakable Performance Center? Are you still hanging out there?
Yeah, I still train there. I'm actually leaving in a couple days here to go play in a spring football league called Major League Football.
And who owns, who's the two owners of Unbreakable Performance Center?
The main owner is Jay Glazer.
Yeah.
Jay Glazer is a Fox Sports personality. He's on Fox NFL Sunday, and he's also a big supporter of veterans.
Right, right.
And, yeah.
And does Urlacher ever show up out there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so here's the
Urlacher
big...
Urlacher does. He doesn't live there. He lives mostly in the Phoenix area, I believe, but he comes out from time to time. He's a crack-up, man, that guy.
And he's got hair.
Yeah, boy.
Let me tell you something. In Chicago, when he came out with the hair thing, which was late last year, it was the biggest. You thought the Bears won the Super Bowl. You know, it was Urlacher has hair, so I had to fit that in because I'm here in Chicago, so I had to get that in.
And there you go. No, it's great. Yeah, he's hilarious. He's a great. He's a really good guy though, and I think he actually just got married just a couple months ago.
Oh, is that well? Good for him. Because his wife can run her fingers.
I don't know how many times it's been, but hey, good for him.
That's right. And his wife could run her fingers through his hair now, so that's probably a good thing. Listen, I know you did some time with the Seattle Seahawks, and you're still working your way to the NFL, and that has a moment and meaning. But the thing I wanted to kind of focus on as we kind of wrap this up is your work. When I say PTSD, I think I've had my own experience with stuff that, you know, it's sometimes we confine that to the military. We say that this is something that it comes out of war, and it's always been part of war. There's no doubt about it, because there's something about the human mind seeing images it's not prepared to see and how that affects us years later. I also have come to respect that people go through stuff in life and it changes them for the worse, not the better. And it's a no less virulent form of PTSD that we all have, something that's happened in our lives that we have trauma after it, and then it changes our behavior. I've seen it. I've worked with people that have had it. You, however, have a concept about post-traumatic growth, that out of the shit storms that life gives us, whether it's being in Iraq or seeing... Look, You know, I know people, and we've all seen this, when you turn on the television and you see Feed the Children commercials and you see people whose stomachs are bloated, covers in flies, barely have enough to eat, and you change the channel, go over to watch reruns of, you know, Who's the Boss, that it's a disconnect. But when you see these images that get inside you, it can either make or break you. And you have this concept about helping veterans, obviously, but other people associated with PTSD, but flip-flopping that as a catalyst for growth, not death.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not an original concept. I didn't make
right.
this up,
right.
but I subscribe to it because it's just once again, going back to making a choice, making a decision, you know? And I think you touched on it earlier. You know, it's not about the circumstances, what's happened to you. It's how you choose to deal with them. You know what I mean? How you choose to view them. And everybody has shit in their lives, you know, veteran or not. Everybody does. And yes, some are different than others. Some are more, I don't want to say more severe, but just, you know, maybe more intense, whatever. It doesn't matter. Everybody has that. Everybody has those things. So you make that decision to either to use that shit and potentially turn it into manure and fertilize the
Amen.
Rest of your life.
That's right.
Or you can just let the stink overwhelm you. And, you know, wallow in it and, you know, become a pig, I guess. And just,
yeah.
You know, and just let it affect your life and let it affect your life in a negative way. I think it should affect your life either way. I don't believe it in trying to just erase memories of things that have happened and ignoring that, because I think that stuff's always there anyway and it's going to come back to haunt you. But to face it, you know, I mean, that's more inspiring anyway. People love seeing other people overcome obstacles. This is your opportunity to overcome an obstacle and do something great and inspire others. So sometimes it's a blessing to have these awful things. I know that sounds crazy, but I see that those obstacles as opportunities, and that's just another way that is something that I can another mountain to climb, essentially. You know, yeah. And at the end of the day, when you through all that crap that has happened to you or that you've experienced. If you can still get to your goal and your destination and you survive it, then it's just that much more powerful.
Hmm. This show is called Life Matters, and I always ask people when I get to this point, as we're just getting ready to cut you loose, what matters most to you in life? Of all that you've gone through and the things that are still ahead of you, your perspective has changed, obviously, over the years, but what matters most to you now?
I want to say just people in general. I mean, they still do. As much as I hate them, they're the best. You know what I mean? It's like a love-hate relationship. But we're so capable of such amazing things. And every day, there's something that somebody does that inspires me. And whether it's a little thing in someone that's close to my life, or a big thing in someone that I've never met or may never meet, it's incredible what we're capable of. Unfortunately, that goes good and bad. I mean, we're powerful people, and so, you know, every day that never ceases to amaze me. But I think that's where I draw my inspiration from every day, and finding that next thing, that next challenge, is from other people, and it's from the good and the bad that they do on a daily basis.
If you're looking for an opportunity for transformation, this is information. I'm giving you information. Nate's giving you information. But if you want to transform it into something different for your life, you got to go to NateBoyer.com and especially watch that ESPN Sports Center feature, the long shot. It's just first of all, from a production standpoint, they did a hell of a goddamn good job on that. And secondly, the stuff that comes out of that, if you can't watch this 6 minutes and 48 seconds and the hair on the back of your neck goes up, you need to get a blood test and see if you're still alive. Nate, I appreciate your time today because I think, again, you're leaving these Reese's pieces for people to find the best within themselves. It's so easy to find the worst. Finding the best takes a little bit of effort, and I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate yours too, sir.
Ah, stop it. What we used to say, when I was in the service, don't call me sir, I know who my parents are.
Oh, there you go. Well, you know, in the popular one, I'm not a sir, I work for a living.
There you go. Nate, appreciate the time. Take care.
Thank you.
If you can't listen to that clip, that 42 minutes or whatever it was, and come away thinking, maybe there's something I ought to do with my life, Just a little bit. Just a little bit. I don't know what to say. Interesting to me that that clip aired long before the whole Colin Kaepernick sitting on the bench thing, right? What an uproar that was 4 years ago, maybe going on 5 years ago now. And what Nate said in that, I'll get back to Kaepernick in a second, but what Nate said in the clip that was so profound to me was that he felt he should do something to earn his Americanism. Imagine waking up every day and feeling like that's your job, that you do something somewhere in some small way or large way to earn the fact that you've been dropped off on this part of the planet, that you weren't dropped off in Darfur or in Afghanistan or Iraq or any other place that's in difficulty, that you were dropped off here in the United States. Not a bad deal. And instead of complaining about how things are, doing something to earn your Americanism as it goes along, that we're all part of this. Colin Kaepernick took that that whole thing about not standing for the national anthem, and it exploded, right? It was this big deal about disrespect and all that kind of stuff. Can't disagree with that. But it was Nate Boyer who got Kaepernick to take a knee instead of sitting on the bench out of a sign of respect. When I was in practice or in the games, you'd say, take a knee. Everybody would take a knee. It was okay to take a knee. You take a knee to sit and listen, to think, to be coached a little bit. And Nate took it upon himself without knowing Colin Kaepernick. And you heard Nate's story about, you know, being a long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks with no football experience. But Kaepernick respected him enough as a Green Beret to listen and to follow his coaching lead and say, I'll take a knee. I don't agree what's going on here, but I'll take a knee. So you can decide if that's worth barking over or not. I find it fascinating. It is one of the sticking points in my life, is that so many people complain about how things are, but they do very little to change it except complain. Most of talk radio that I've spent 25 years in is filled with people who know everything about everything but haven't done a damn thing. But they talk like they have. And people follow that. And I don't think it's a good idea. And if you got involved in some issue that is bothering you, then you wouldn't have time to complain about it because you'd be involved in the solution of it on your level. So I give a snap salute to my brother Nate Boyer for the work that he has done in the world and continues to do, and I urge you to do the same. Earn your Americanism. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.
There are those who can live with the things they don't believe in. They are giving up their lives for something that is less than it can be. Some have longed for a home and a place of inspiration. Some will fill the emptiness inside by giving it all to the things that they believe. They believe. Maybe it's just the dream in me. Maybe it's just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom that I found. But given the possibility of living up to the dream in me, you know that I'd be reaching for higher ground. I will stand on my own. I will live up to this vision. I will trust in what I feel and follow my heart until it brings me home. Bring me home. Maybe it's just the dream in me. Maybe it's just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom that I found. Possibility of living up to the dream in me, you know that I'll be reaching for higher ground. Keep me through the night, lead me to the light, teach me the magic of wonder, give me the spirit to just my style. Maybe it's just the freedom.